Chapter 13. Elaint the Fading. It would make a fine traveling companion, Caddy Bree argued when her suggestion had been met with headshakes and grumbles. She had awakened to find that she was a bit colder than she had been the night before. She conjured their breakfast magically, creating enough food to keep the bellies of 10 large dwarves from growling the whole of the day. But it should have been half again that amount. A companion that would turn on us the moment you let down your guard, Jarlaxle countered. I won't. And it won't be a powerful beast in any case. Just a minor elemental to cut a path before us, to melt the ice that might take our feet out from under us, and to help keep the chill out of the air, she thought, but did not add. Jarlaxle turned his gaze to Zack and Entreri, the weapon master responding with a shrug, and Entreri hardly seeming to care either way except to say, Even with your damned ring, this cold wind is rooting in my bones. Jarlaxle held up his hands in surrender. All right, then, he agreed. And he motioned for Zack to move to the open ground between them and the small lake at the base of the towering glacier. With a shrug, the weapon master complied, drawing the empty sword hilt from his belt. He fidgeted with it in his hand, closed his eyes, and called upon its power, flicking his wrist and bringing forth not the blade of light but the whip of flame. He rolled its length in the air before him, studying it for a few moments, then looked to his companions. A large tear? He asked, and not for the first time. The best you can manage, Caddy Bree replied. Over his head rolled the whip, and Zack snapped it hard before him, drawing a bright line in the air, dripping fire. He looked to Caddy Bree, though, showing her a frown. Caddy Bree understood his consternation, for she too had recognized that the whip wasn't quite as formidable as it had previously seemed. Like her healing spell the previous night or the conjured meal, the whip's fire seemed somehow lesser, diminished. Let that one vanish, Zack prompted. Tell me when you're ready and I'll cut it deeper. Do it, Caddy Bree replied, walking up beside him. He rolled the whip out before him, cracking it in the air once, twice, thrice in rapid succession, each time calling forth the deeper powers of the enchantment to cut tears into the plane of fire. Caddy Bree lifted her open hand before her face, looking through her fingers at the small tears, three thin, short lines of what looked like floating lava. She reached into her ring, calling to the fiery plane, trying to bring forth an elemental. She reached one, felt its strange sentience, connected to it, and forced it to move to the tear. A wall of denial, of anger, a stream of invective she could not understand, struck her, along with a sudden blast of cold, cold wind. What? She asked to no one, fully by reflex, and she lowered her hand and looked at the wavering lines of magma, the small drips of flame falling to the ground before them, landing and coalescing as they tried to form into a singular, living being of flame. Tried and struggled to little avail, much of the magma hardening almost immediately to dead black rock. The ground began to shake beneath the companions, a sudden rolling rumble, followed by a sharp sound from the glacial wall to their left and high above. Caddy Bree felt the unbridled anger through her ring. But it wasn't coming from the failing fire elemental. In fact, she felt that being's fear and loathing, though neither was aimed at her. No, this was bigger, stronger, a level of indecipherable power and outrage she had known only once before in her life. Run, she told her friends, and she backed up a few steps. She shook her head, it could not be. Run, she said again, turning and sprinting off directly away from the towering glacial wall. You cannot control it? She heard Jarlaxle calling as he rushed to keep up with her, and she realized that he was speaking of the fire elemental. Another rumble knocked her off balance and nearly sent her tumbling. Then came a deafening and long cracking sound, and she didn't dare look back or slow her stride. By the gods, she heard Entreri gasp, and now she did glance back. The ground shook, the glacier calved, fissures appearing down the sides of a large jag in its facing, then the whole of it sliding down, striking the ground with tremendous force and falling forward, crashing over the town, shattering the buildings nearest the ice wall, burying the magma lines, extinguishing whatever being of fire had come through Zack's tear in the material plane. Caddy Bree was on the ground, and she was not alone. Only Jarlaxle remained upright, the clever rogue with an answer for everything, enacting a levitation spell and getting just above the rolling, shaking, quaking stones. A great rush of bits of ice, water, and wind washed over the four. Then it was quiet, settled, and the air cleared, revealing a gigantic chunk of ice, half in, half out of the small lake. One that would have buried them all where they stood had Caddy Bree not heard the threat and reacted. "What do you know?" Jarlaxle asked her, helping her to her feet. Her eyes never left the towering wall of ice. "The glacier," she mumbled. "It is alive."
"Alive?"
"Megara," she said, "like Megara."
"I take it that it didn't like my whip," Zack said dryly.
"Or my call to the realm of fire," Caddy Bree replied. They collected themselves and headed off with all speed, moving up out of the valley on the wall opposite the one they had descended to get here. Once they got far enough away, they paused and rested, looking back at the now distant town and glacier.
"We should be far from that ice," Entreria remarked.
"But if Doomwheel is alive, she is in there," Caddy Bree admitted, and she felt the surprised stares of the others upon her. A long while passed.
"The glacier? Well,
how do you propose we get in there?" Entreri asked sourly, at the same time that Jarlaxle asked, "Are you sure?"
Caddy Bree pondered that for a few moments, then shook her head. "It is a guess," she admitted. "But that's what I felt. And if she is in the glacier, or perhaps beyond the glacier, she is still far away, I believe."
"Then what do we do?" Entreri asked, his voice growing sharper with frustration with each unanswered question.
Jarlaxle moved to the mountain wall at the side of the trail, cast his levitation, and climbed up the wall.
"The glacier goes a long way," he called down from his high perch. "Beyond this last line of mountains, and out onto the ice pack. Let us get down there and move alongside it. We'll use Kazidea often, and so perhaps we'll know when we pass Doomwheel."
"If we pass Doomwheel," Entreri corrected, too quietly for Jarlaxle to hear.
Caddy Bree looked at the man and wanted to scold him for his pessimism, but in this instance she thought that sentiment rather appropriate. They picked their way along the mountainsides, roughly paralleling the glacier, and the sun still circled them, spying on them, hour after hour and through the next day, though it seemed to be lower in the sky now than when they had first arrived in the far north 10 days before. During those hours when it went behind the mountains, the air was now dark enough for them to see stars above. Dull but visible. That brought a sobering notion to Caddy Bree as she considered her years in Icewind Dale. The days there were long in the summer, but very short in the winter. She didn't know the precise date, but certainly they were well into the 9th month, Elaint now, with the autumnal equinox approaching. Elaint the Fading, it was called. The sun's continual stalk of them had been maddening indeed. But the woman wondered if she and her companions would soon miss it sorely. She shuddered against the thought. Or maybe the shudder was against the cold north wind cutting into her bones up here on the open mountain heights. Cold enough to bite through the magical protection she wore, which should have shielded her better than any clothing, any number of fur layers she could possibly wear. She shuddered again, and this time knew that shiver's source to be her fears of what would happen once that sun went below the horizon, once the northern night fell. They had some cover from the howling wind as they descended along the last rocky trail, heading down toward the icy plain. To their left, the mountains continued beyond sight, to their right, a cliff, and when the trail bent slightly, they could see, too, beyond the mountain wall, the towering side of the massive glacier, which now seemed to Caddy Bree like a sleeping giant white serpent, stretched out long upon the ice and using the mountains to rest its head. They crossed from the stone to the ice pack and continued on. At one point, Jarlaxle used the directional orb, but the mercenary, after several tries, just tossed it back into his pouch. Could not determine which way was north for some reason. Still they pressed on, moving along the ice pack, the towering glacial wall barely a few hundred yards to their right. Wind-whipped bits of ice nipped at them with every step. At one point, Jarlaxle brought forth his nightmare, bidding Entreri to do the same, and the four went up and galloped along.
but only for a short while, before one of the hell steeds, Jarlaxle's this time, began to buck and snort and turn in protest, its magic quickly waning. Jarlaxle dismissed the steed, and Entreri following suit.
"We have to get farther away from that thing," a shivering Entreri said as he replaced the figurine in his belt pouch.
He nodded his chin at the towering wall of ice. "You think it's the glacier causing this?" Jarlaxle was also rubbing his hands briskly together. "You think it is attacking us?"
"No," Caddy Bree answered before Entreri could. When the others all looked at her, she continued, "I don't sense its presence, and I doubt that it could know where we are, even."
"It threw a wall of ice at us," Entreri reminded her.
"Not at us," Caddy Bree corrected. "At the tear into the plane of fire. It didn't much like the intrusion. I felt its surprise and anger keenly. I do not feel that malice now when I focus on my ring."
"So it's an ice primordial?" Entreri asked. "Or a god of coldness?"
"I don't know," Caddy Bree admitted. "I think it is a powerful elemental being of some sort, or that there is one within the glacier. I've never heard of an ice primordial, but I had never heard of a fire primordial until we went into Gontalgrim. What I felt back in the town was a primal reaction to the fire.
We had a fire going before that, with no complaints from the glacier," Jarlaxle pointed out.
"But not a tear into the plane of fire," Zack reasoned, and he pulled the hilt from his belt. "Ready your ring, and let us see what we may," he said to Caddy Bree. Then he called upon the blade of light.
Zack's expression showed his surprise when the sword ignited, for it seemed meager indeed, almost like a thinner short sword, or a long, narrow dagger than the weapon he had brought forth previously. He rolled it about in his hand and changed it from sword to whip, and again the weapon seemed a pale reflection of its previous power. Determinedly, Zack cracked the whip repeatedly, trying to cut a tear. But no more than a few wispy fingers of flame extended from it. There was no planar rift left behind in the air. The weapon master looked to Caddy Bree, who shook her head.
"I felt no connection to the fire plane and no recourse from the glacier."
"It broke your weapon?" Entreri asked.
"No, maybe it's more than that."
Caddy Bree was sure of it, though she couldn't yet articulate her feelings. "Whatever it is, it's getting too cold out here, even for our magic," Jarlaxle said. He removed his hat and pulled out the small circular piece of black cloth. "Let's get some shelter from this wind. Warm our toes and figure out how to proceed." He tossed the cloth down to the ice pack, thinking to make a hole for them to crawl into, but the cloth just landed and lay there, not elongating, not creating a portal. It seemed no more than a piece of unremarkable velvet. The wind picked it up and started to blow it away, and only Entreri's quick reaction to snatch it from the air prevented the loss of one of Jarlaxle's most coveted toys.
"What was that?"
Entreri asked, but Jarlaxle stood there, hands on hips, staring dumbfounded at the wall.
"First the directional orb, then the nightmares, then the sun blade, now your portable hole," Entreri remarked.
"No," Caddy Bree corrected, "first my spells." She looked at Zack and pointed to his shoulder. "The last healing spell I cast upon you."
"It worked," he reminded her.
"It did, but it felt strange. The magic here is somewhat altered. Perhaps it is the sun and the cold, the pale light, I don't know. But now I feel it is more than altered, and is perhaps leaving."
She looked Jarlaxle in the eye.
"We should go home."
His jaw tightened. He shook his head and very uncharacteristically seemed ready to cry out in rage.
"And it's getting colder," said Zack.
"No," said Caddy Bree. "It's not getting colder around us. Our magical protection is weakening."
Jarlaxle reached into his pouch and brought forth a piece of kindling.
"We are not yet defeated," he told them. "Let us find some shelter and start a fire."
But Caddy Bree shook her head. She took a deep breath and put the thumb and forefinger of her right hand over the ring on her left, the ring of elemental protection Jarlaxle had given her.
"If I remove it, will I once again have to acclimate to it?" she asked the rogue.
"What are you doing?" Entreri asked.
"I want to measure how much protection these items are actually offering us," she explained. "Can I put it right back on and realize the magic of it?"
"Yes," Jarlaxle said. "You were attuned to its power."
Caddy Bree took a deep breath, then slipped the ring off. Her eyes widened and she gasped, then slid it right back on.
Shelter and fire won't be nearly enough to sustain us if this magic fails completely. We have to be out of here right now, she said.
The ring is functioning, but not as before. We have come so far to abandon it all, Jarl Axel argued.
We haven't gone anywhere, Entreri noted.
You come with me or I leave you behind, Caddy Bree warned, her tone offering no room for debate.
She held out her hands and stared down the other three, and Entreri and Zack looking to Jarl Axel for leadership here.
Caddy Bree didn't flinch, didn't blink, and didn't lower her hands.
We have failed, she said, and this is no death I want.
Zack broke ranks first, grabbing her hand and holding his other out to Jarl Axel, who hesitated. But when Entreri took her other hand, the frustrated drow had no choice but to concede. He took the offered hands, completing the ring, and Caddy Bree cast her most powerful spell, one she had prepared extensively and fastidiously before they began their journey. This was the true escape, but Dwyamer to put them back in Long Saddle.
A word of recall. Nothing happened.
Caddy Bree stared blankly ahead. She knew the magic was weakening, but for this spell to have failed completely.
Gods, Entreri breathed.
We need to find shelter, Jarl Axel said, now. They moved as quickly as they could manage, angling toward the glacial wall to see if perhaps there were any caves or crevices to be found. After some time, Entreri spotted one. He directed them straight toward the massive glacier and a huge rift along its side.
Doesn't seem like the best idea, Zack remarked. Do we have a choice? Entreri countered.
Go, Caddy Bree told them, trying to lift fast sagging spirits. We'll be all right.
Perhaps it was the cold that caused me to stutter or somehow else defeated my spell. Out of the wind will be better.
Off they went, moving faster across the ice pack now that they had a destination in sight, the glacier looming higher, higher. They slowed as they neared, with a giant river of ice towering hundreds of feet above them, the rift some 30 feet across and running from the base all the way to the top, open to the sky. They went in tentatively and felt some relief immediately as the wind diminished around them, but not enough for them to make a fire, and not enough for them to survive for much longer. They had no choice but to go in deeper, 100 strides, 200.
It's getting warmer, a surprised Zacnafane observed. The walls of ice are acting as a blanket for us, Entreri offered.
No, came Caddy Bree's correction from behind, and when the other three turned, they found the woman holding her protective ring in her hand, having removed it yet again.
This is more than that.
How cold are you? A surprised Zacnafane asked.
Chilly, not cold, Entreri answered for her, for he, too, had removed his ring. He looked at Jarl Axel.
What is this place?
I know not. Is the beast warm on the inside? They went on and found a second surprise when the floor of the rift became a shallow puddle, then turned from ice to soil, hard at first like the tundra, but even that changing as they continued. They heard the water running before they came upon it, a small stream flowing before them at a T-shaped intersection in the rift. The tunnel widened considerably in both directions, with enough solid and dry ground for them to walk along either side of the small stream, which was about as wide as a drow was tall. Steam wafted off the flowing water. Entreri was the first to bend, gingerly tapping and then dipping his hand into the water.
Warm, he told them, pulling his hand back out.
Hot even.
Caddy Bree, Jarl Axel, and Entreri stopped there for a bit to take in the unexpected channel, while Zacnafane ran off to the left, deeper into the glacier to scout.
We should eat, Jarl Axel said, and reached into his belt pouch.
His hand went in only a very short way, hitting the bottom.
Jarl Axel's eyes widened in shock.
What? Entreri asked.
The pouch. The food. I cannot access it.
Caddy Bree began to cast a spell, a quick one, and when she finished with nothing to show for it, she shook her head grimly at the others.
I cannot summon any food. I hear no magic, no words of Mialiki, no songs of Maestra's weave.
Here, they heard Zack's voice and turned to see him at the beginning of a bend in the corridor, waving them to him. Around that corner, the open-air passage became a high-ceilinged tunnel, but only for a short distance, before it opened again to the sky and to a wider chamber, the stream flowing along its right-hand side, and the rest of it, perhaps a quarter acre of land covered in grass and flowers and bushes full of berries. And bees, buzzing happily and noticing the newcomers not at all.
"By the gods," Catty Bree whispered. "What is this place?"
Artemis and Treri asked again, but no one could find the breath, let alone the words, to answer him. When she awakened after a long and comfortable sleep, Catty Bree had to spend a few moments to remind herself yet again that this was real. The flowers were real, the insects were real, and the blueberries and raspberries and strawberries were real. And the warmth was real here in this place, hemmed in by mountainous walls of ice, and with a howling wind just beyond that would freeze her solid in short moments. As her thoughts and senses came fully into the present, the first thing she noticed, looking straight up to the open sky high above, was how much dimmer the light seemed. She nodded, understanding. The long winter nights were coming. Would there even be a daytime? "Shh," Jarl Axel said, sitting nearby, and she turned her head to glance at him. He motioned for her to sit up and look across the way. She went up on her elbows, then taken by the sight, and sat up slowly, making no sudden movements. A family of white foxes was over at the widest part of the flowing water. One adult sat watching, the other drinking, while three kits rolled in the grass and dirt along the bank. "They've seen us, and seem not to care," Jarl Axel whispered. "They probably have no experience with people," Catty Bree whispered back. The canids were no more than 20 strides away. She thought to prepare some spells of animal friendship or communication, that she might use these intelligent little predators to get a sense of the area. But she didn't need those spells to understand that the foxes seemed perfectly at ease in here, and that they were familiar with this chamber. Besides, she was pretty sure the magic wouldn't work, despite the obviously enchanted nature of this place. Two of the kits continued to tumble about, but the third noticed them then, and began to approach curiously, though not cautiously. It halved the distance quickly, and the watching adult seemed to take note, but merely yawned. Catty Bree felt the eyes of her companions upon her, but could only offer a shrug in response. The kit kept coming, and began yipping. The adult foxes seemed not to care. The other two kits began rambling toward the unexpected visitors. The first kit went right up to Catty Bree's feet and sniffed, then jumped upon one foot and began wrestling and gnawing. "Domesticated?" Jarl Axel asked.
"By whom?"
Entreri asked.
"By them," answered Catty Bree.
It was at the end of the line, nearest the tunnel from which they had entered this chamber, and so looking past her friends and deeper into the rift, she sucked in her breath, her eyes unblinking. The others slowly turned about. 5 figures stood at the far entrance of the chamber, strangely dressed in shiny black skin-tight suits that seemed to be a single piece of clothing, feet to collar, and with a cloak lined in thick white fur, very much like that of the fox family who had come into the chamber. Each of the newcomers carried a hand crossbow at the ready, and that clue led Catty Bree to look more closely, to confirm what her eyes had shown right away but her mind had pushed aside due to the sheer strangeness, the alien nature of their outfits. They were drow.